welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Haynes, and Sandra Johnson.
I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California.
And I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Haynes from Nolan Haynes Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Well, what's happening in the world of studio design this week, everybody?
We just started a really large EPUB document, like hundreds and hundreds of pages with all sorts of stuff. So I'm learning a little bit more about EPUB than I knew before. And tomorrow I'm doing a training for a group of graphic designers at a company on how not to lose their design skills when they open PowerPoint.
Oh, that's an awesome topic name. I like it.
That's great, because the brains turn off for some reason.
Oh, they absolutely do. You know, I used to go through lots of designer portfolios when I was hiring, and you go through, you know, beautiful print, beautiful illustration, beautiful identity work and web work, and then you get to the presentation section, and it's like, who designed this stuff?
Yeah.
So it's like,
they forgot to use the grid. I mean, it's like number one.
Right. Or like, did you know that you shouldn't put blue type over red background? Like, what?
Exactly.
I mean, it just, it sort of goes out the window.
That's
anyway,
funny.
Well, we've talked about that a lot.
Not to lose your design chops when using. I like it.
That's very good. Well, I'm working my buns off. You know how it is. Pre-vacation mode. I'm headed for London.
Because you're
Friday.
Still shoveling snow, right?
Oh, it's sunny and 40 up
we,
there.
We still have a little snow on the ground. Do you have snow on the ground?
No, not at all.
Oh, really?
No.
We got none. Okay,
anyway,
I'm sorry, Sadie. What were you saying? You're doing something exciting, I'm sure.
I am. We're headed for a family vacation to London on Friday. My entire family, with the exception of my college-bound son, will be joining us there.
That is exciting. Wow.
Yeah, it is. And like
that's
I said,
way more exciting.
You know how it is. Working to get to go on vacation, you put in double the time just to be able to take time off. And that's the mode I'm in.
Let's see here. We have Nolan, this will kind of roll right in there. It's kind of interesting, right along with yours. We have a new client. It's another, this is another InDesign to PowerPoint project. And the goal of this one is to develop a PowerPoint document template, so a US letter size document. So the analysts at this corporation can do their own basically desktop publishing versus handing off everything to their internal design department. So this design department, they're really great. They gave us a super InDesign template they work with, this and that. They do a lot of stuff. I think they do a lot of EPUB work as well. That's the tie-in, by the way. And they're just looking to offload some of their duties because they need, you know, it's an internal design department. I don't know how many people are there, but they're like, you know, there are hundreds of analysts trying to throw these documents at us to prep. So we're moving them to an all, I mean, their end result is a PDF. There is no print actually. So we're designing this really cool. We spec'd it out with, I believe, 32 custom layouts. So it's all the different types of print layouts, all preset, ready to go. And their internal department, design department's happy, and the clients are happy, and we're happy to have a new client.
Hey, have you ever exported PDF to PowerPoint from Acrobat?
I don't think
PDF
so.
To PowerPoint. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's amazing. Like, it in the last year or two, they've made it so excellent. I mean, I'm not going to say that. I mean, I don't know. Think it handles masters or whatever, but I've done it a few times just when I've had to get content in a PowerPoint quickly. And also I used it once when a client wanted to mark up a PDF and they, for whatever reason, they didn't have Acrobat, and they were like, can we just do it in Power? Can you send us the PowerPoint version so we can make edits? And I said, there is no PowerPoint version, but you know what? I'll make one for you in 30 seconds. So that was easier for them just to put in notes, you know, on individual pages. And I just took those and went back to InDesign. So it's really powerful.
It's really good. So two things. Sandy, you know what Nolan's biggest mistake was?
What?
He said he could do it in 30 seconds.
No. I didn't tell the client
Oh,
that.
Okay. the other one we use, I use the PowerPoint converter. I just used it. Actually, we had a presenter that would supply PDFs because it was his proprietary content. and the production company were stringing together this huge, I mean, it was just back to back to back presenters. It was really, really tight scheduling. I said, okay, we're going to have to switch machines. We'll run the PDF. It's, you know, full size. We'll run it. It'll look like a presentation. Got down to it. I was like, okay, I can actually put this into a presentation. You know, just don't tell the poor presenter that his stuff really isn't that secure.
Secure, right.
Converted it over. Took care of it. It was no problem at all. But the other thing it does is export to images is really cool too. I don't know if you ever use that. Take a PDF and just drop them out as photos. So when we get documents, yeah, and we want to put like a little fan out of, you know, here's the legal brief, and you know, sure, you want to put like, you know, the 19 pages from a PDF. You can just export them and end up with 19 images to drop into PowerPoint. Yep. It's got that's another amazing cool feature.
That's great.
News. Is there news happening in the presentation world?
There is news. Microsoft has recently invested in an organization, a company called Picket. They're a stock vendor site, and Picket announced recently a huge investment from Microsoft that will supposedly take them to the next level and be more competitive with some other stock sites that are out there. For our listeners who may not know this, Picket has been a free add-in in PowerPoint for some time now. It's limited. I think for the everyday user, you're going to find some great free options there. It does come with advertising, but if you go to your how do you navigate to add add-ins? I can't remember, but
it's insert and store, I believe.
Yeah, insert store. That's right. And then from there, you can search the Microsoft Store for Picket, it's called, and it'll end up in your ribbon and give you options.
There's also a Shutterstock similar add-in, but
right,
Microsoft is not investing in Shutterstock.
That'll be interesting. I mean, you know how Adobe's stock came to be is Adobe just basically bought another stock photography company, rebranded it, and you know that's how they got their start. I mean, they're expanding out. We use Adobe Stock now as our annual subscription for this year anyways.
Okay.
And, but maybe Microsoft's kind of looking at the same thing. Pick it when they say they're going to expand, they're just going to absorb. There's so many smaller companies out there now. Mm-hmm. It would be, I am not that familiar with Picket. I remember looking at it just mainly from the add-in and see how it interfaces with that little, how it interfaces on the right,
right
bar, the right action pane there.
I did some comparison just to see how it compared to the big ones out there. And
You get what you pay for.
Yeah, exactly.
This literally just popped up on the home page of the news site. I was like, that is really amazing because it's a PowerPoint related story on the news feed. And it's Paul Ryan's wonky PowerPoint story. And I can't make this headline up if I tried. The title is literally, I'm reading it right now, Speaker Rolls Up Sleeves for a Wonky PowerPoint. Now, first of all, it's not a PowerPoint. It's a presentation that was done with PowerPoint. But anyways,
yes.
Second of all, what made it really good is the speaker is the U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan. So, you know, and then third is, you know, you got the word wonky in there, which is one of my go-to words, by the way. I just loved it. I was like, oh, this is fantastic.
Funny.
I just find it kind of funny. It's definitely sensationalism on the press side there to get, you know, words like wonky and then describing a presentation as PowerPoint. Again, blaming the program, not the,
Right.
We're blaming the wrong thing. In addition, he used 4x3 slides on a 16x9 monitor.
I noticed that instantly.
Oh my gosh.
He read the bullet points, but the slides did have minimal text. They weren't full sentences. They were nice, large things. You know, it's actually from a little while ago. It's from Friday, March 10th.
Right.
So I've been saving that for this, and I will put the link to it because it's on USA Today.
Were you able to get the actual slides?
No, I wasn't. I just looked at the video. Talking.
I've been trying to get a hold of the actual slides. I can't find them anywhere.
It'd be nice. You could recreate them poorly and do a before and after.
Yeah, but that would take time.
It would take time. but I would love to see someone do it right.
Yeah, work for a living.
You guys. So anyway, since he's a Wisconsin congressman.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Your home state.
You're
not.
Yeah.
You should help.
So anyway, well, here's what I did. I tweeted the day after the story was released, and because I thought it was highly appropriate that I suggest he call me next time.
Oh, absolutely.
Those are the words that I used. I doubt he even sees it, but I just thought, heck, I'm
so
from
you
Wisconsin.
Texted call me next time. The press is going to have a field day with that statement.
I didn't go very far. I didn't get any retweets or anything.
You know, I've got if you search my my blog, presentyourstory.com. I've tried to put up posts anytime I see a prominent politician using PowerPoint. Who was it? A couple of New York governors, I think. I think Mario Cuomo used one, and I've got some other people up there. And then, of course, the biggest use of a politician was Obama's State of the Union addresses that people didn't realize if you just watched it live on TV. But if you watch the YouTube later, it's called the Enhanced State of the Union. And they do like a two-thirds, one-third split screen where vertically on the side, he essentially has slides with charts and other stuff. And it's actually quite well done.
Any other news?
Yeah. So the agenda has been set for the presentation summit. So you can go to that's we've talked about that a lot. You can go to betterpresenting.com and find out who's talking. That's in September, I think, end of September. Also, if you can also go to the Presentation Guild, because if you sign up, Sandy, right, the first 100 registrants to Better Presenting will get a free one-year membership to Presentation Guild.
That's correct.
Okay. Oh, one last bit of this is news. It's for the podcast itself. It's kind of geeky URL type news, and I'm pretty excited. Implemented a new backend add-in to the Presentation Podcast website. So now you can literally go to thepresentationpodcast.com/iTunes and it'll drop you right to our iTunes feed. Or you could do thepresentationpodcast.com/Google. It'll take you to the Google Play feed. And Stitcher is the other one. So you could do /Stitcher. It'll take you right to the our podcast page for that. So you don't have to go hunting through it. So if you're looking to give us a review, which would be awesome, it's really, really easy. Go to thepresentationpodcast.com/iTunes. It'll drop you right into iTunes. You'll see the Presentation Podcast and you can click leave a review, which would be awesome. So other people can find us. That is absolutely, I think, the number one way people find podcasts is by reviews and a little bit of rating and referral. So thank you.
That's great. That makes it easy for everyone.
Well, it is easy to say yes. It's polite. Everyone likes to hear yes. But in the real world, well, it's sometimes better to say no to a project for many reasons. Nolan, Sandy, and myself each have very different clients and different business practices, but we do all agree on saying no is sometimes best for the client, sometimes it's best for our businesses. So it's our topic of discussion today is when to say no.
Well, okay, speaking of no, have either of you ever said no to a project request? What was the reason?
No, I just take everything that anybody ever asked me. I do windows. I mowed somebody's lawn the other day. No, yes. I wouldn't say all the time, but absolutely. I mean, the biggest reason is probably it's just out of my skill set. For example, I make it very clear I don't do digital or web. And I wouldn't know where to begin with a project like that. So, I mean, there are also in theory projects I could do. I could slog through like a Microsoft Word job, but I just hate working in it. I hate doing it. And it's not going to be fun. It's not going to be enjoyable. It's going to be painful. So I'll just pass on that.
You know what? I do take those Microsoft Word jobs.
You do? Yeah. I'm sending them right your way.
No. Just so depending on the level, if it's a regular client, I will go back to them and I'll say, I can do this for you, but remember, I'm a PowerPoint MVP, not a Microsoft Word MVP.
I have the same statement about Excel quite often. Okay. Remember, yes. I know you're a financial institute. I am a PowerPoint. I just make Excel look good. I don't know the coding behind it. Yes. I know who to refer you to, though.
I've said no when I thought something was out of my skill set or thought that many of my talented colleagues could do a better job. For example, I don't do training as a rule. When I do training, it's specific to usually a template that I've designed for a client because I can't stand turning over a template and them telling me it doesn't work because I know it works. So I'll do training on that. But I've declined new business training opportunities and passed them on to, say, Nolan if it's a visualization training.
I'll trade you my word for training.
There you go. Software printer. Yes. And then very recently, I actually had to say no to an existing client because one day they plopped 30 plus presentations on my desk and said, here are the presentations we told you about. And I said, no, no, you didn't. I don't have 36 hours that it takes straight to do this, and nor would I plop this on my subcontractor's desk. So yeah. I have said no.
We'll talk about rush rates in a bit.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, of course. I mean, we've all gotten those literally physically impossible to turn around projects. Mm-hmm.
So have you ever said no to a request? I would, you know, I can't think of a specific project right now, and I probably should, may have just mentally blocked them out, but we do say no occasionally. In general, no projects tend to be ones that are new clients that don't follow through with a project deposit. I think our next episode, we're talking all about money, and that'll be a conversation point there is deposits. But, you know, I just get nervous. I'm like, you know, this is a fairly large project and they want a quick turnaround. So we'll say no there because it's more of a business maneuver at that point.
But it's also, it's an indication of seriousness. And I think we've all had introductory calls with clients that don't go anywhere because, you know, they might sound serious in the beginning, but if they can't, you know, send you the information you requested or can't do a follow-up call, then clearly can't give you a deposit.
To Sandy's point, another reason to say no is just an impossible timeline. I can't say I've been handed 36 presentations or 30 presentations to do in 36 hours, but it's the same idea. It's just, it's like impending failure. And I just don't want to be associated with it because no matter what, you can't look good to the client who needs something desperately often, but it's just not a possibility. And we try and schedule out all of our times. I will say that Lori, my business partner, is pretty good at spotting projects that need to be clarified, meaning often you're contacted about a project and all seem good. And then as you're going through it, something just doesn't seem to fit right. Mm-hmm. And you realize you're about to go down a rabbit hole. You know, you're just going to potentially fall forever. So, I mean, Lori even bought me a no button.
N-O.
No! No, 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 no.
No!
No!
No, no, no!
To make fun of the fact that I'm the yes person. I'll say yes to anything. I mean, when we started doing web design, so back in the day when Flash was huge, and because I was doing director work, and people say, hey, could you make a Flash thing? Sure. Lori say, do you know how to do that? I'm like, no.
No.
Like, you said no to me, but not the client. I'm like, yeah, but they're the ones that had the project. So I've been guilty of saying yes to too many things. So maybe this is the reason we have this topic.
Consummate sales guy.
So I had mentioned, needing deposits as a sort of an indication of being serious. And that's generally new clients. So let's talk about sort of new clients versus just sort of clients in general. Have you ever said no to somebody wanting to be a client just because it wasn't right?
Well, you start it, Nolan, because it's obviously top of mind, I got a feeling.
Yeah, I mean, so aside from sort of previous logistical issues, as I said, those sort of red flags go up about, you know, this person really isn't serious. But one time I used to do the sales presentations every year for Fox News, and I'd stopped doing it because I sort of moved on and done other stuff. But then I got a call from the team asking me if I could do it, and I just couldn't logistically and time wise. But there was this new designer who I had met, and I thought he would be good for it, so I recommended him. Actually, first I called him and I said, "Would you be interested in this?" And I told him it's Fox News. And he's like, yeah, you know, it sounds good to be interested. So I connected my friends, the team, with him, and he ended up talking with them for a little bit, but then called me a couple weeks later saying he declined it because he disagreed with Fox News's politics.
Oh.
And I said, well, that's fine, but I'm not going to recommend you for anything in the future because that's a decision you should have made before stringing my friends along.
Oh my gosh.
So... yeah. So that
was his loss.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just not the kind of thing. I mean, you can turn down a job for lots of reasons at any point, but that's the kind of thing you know up front, I think.
So and, you know, I've done
that's
that.
An interesting one.
It is very interesting. And I did something similar. Whenever I pass on work to subcontractors the work that might be a little controversial, I will ask them up front, this is the situation, this is what we're talking about, are you offended by it, do you have any beliefs that you're gonna that you can't carry this on? So I don't think you even thought for a moment that it would be an issue, but
Well, I actually did, because I told him up front. I mean, but you know, I've been in similar situations. I do a lot of stuff for women's health. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, so it's not only right. political, but also there's some graphic things we've had to do and put together.
I will offline tell you about my women's health story. It's hysterical. I mean, we do a lot there, but no, I have a subcontractor
that sounds like a great story.
I forgot to mention. Okay. You know, that's the controversial. So speaking of controversial, this one's kind of controversial, but on a business level as well. So yes, we've said no to someone wanting to be our client. And the one I'm thinking of was actually a conflict of interest. Someone contacted us direct. I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this really, really abstract so nobody can figure anything out. Someone contacted us direct after we had completed a large design project for them, but through another agency. And it became tricky because the client basically ended the relationship with the agency after that project. They're like, you know, their contract was done, but they wanted to have some additional presentation design work done for another division. So they contact us direct, and it was a hard one, but you know, I felt that TLC Creative should not bypass our client, which was the agency. So in this case, we ended up not taking on the project, which could have led to potentially a lot more, but it was best for our company. So it was kind of a working relationship thing. And I made sure to let the agency know, hey, just so you know, they, you know, we've been contacted. I don't know what your relationship is. And at that point, I said, you might want to contact this person. They have they have some other work. It's not nearly as large in scale. And that's when I was told, you know, we pretty much don't have a contract with there's no longer a contract relationship. But we stuck by it. So yeah, we've said no for a conflict of interest type of scenario. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I think it's usually more mutual for me. After further discussion of the client's needs, I'll either make an offer they can refuse, or I'll recommend someone else for the project. That's how I handle it. That said, there have been warning signs, red flags that go up.
Let's take that one. What are some warning signs or red flags that made you think that saying no was the best course of action?
I had a guy call me from London, actually, where you're headed, Sandy.
Yes.
last year, and I wanted a presentation, and I asked, like, what's your business? What do you do? And he said, well, I'm a DJ, a rapper, I'm a marketer, a designer, I'm in the fashion industry, I do this, I do that, I'm looking to... And he sort of went on and on and on and on, and I was like... and then I looked at his website, which was just a hot mess. And I think we had an initial call, and I said, well, you know, call me back after I've given you all this information. Never heard from him again.
Exactly.
But that would have been the red
flag. That's who Sandy's going to visit right now.
I took the business. No. This is the reason I brought up the question. I had a potential client. He was referred to me by another client and a friend. This gentleman, and I put that in air quotes, started the conversation by telling me how late he was out the night before. By the end of the call, I learned that he was a misogynist. Is that no misogynist? I always mispronounce that.
He was not a good guy.
He was not a good guy. No, he talked down to me the entire conversation. He was critical of my work. I mean, seriously, the first call where I'm showing him examples, and he's saying, "Well, I can do that," but he still wanted to work with me and negotiate my rate.
Oh, of course, yeah, because yes. He could do it, so it can't be that
exactly.
hard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
can we do a whole podcast on the phrase, well, I could do that?
Well, I could do that.
So obviously, Sandy, you said no.
No, I sent him a Dear John email, and he couldn't understand why.
You know, hearing phrases like, oh, this is easy, and this is really quick, when they, being the other person, don't really know the technical side of things. I mean, you know, without knowing the technical back end of what it really takes to make things work correctly, because I mean, we've all received presentations, especially that are just, there's nothing technical about them to make it easy to work with.
Yes.
You know, those, this is easy is not easy for anybody else after the fact.
I have a quote from a client. I'm sorry, Nolan. I have a quote from a client that's exactly, it plays into exactly what Troy said. She said, "Oh, okay, I'll make the edits. Will you just send me an email on how to do that animation?"
It takes longer to explain than do.
Exactly.
Exactly. You know, you had mentioned, the guy immediately started trying to negotiate. For me, anybody that immediately starts talking about money and sort of being worried about that from the start generally indicates it's not, you know, I'm not saying I'm one of those, if you have to ask, you can't afford it. But, you know, I'm at the higher end, certainly, of what we do. And, you know, you can just sort of get a sense that people are at a different level.
Well, it's a different mindset. It's not that they can't afford you. Their mindset is about managing the budget rather than your delivering a great product. So it's the mindset that is the red flag when they start talking about money.
Hey, Sandy. Sandy, what's the weirdest job you ever turned down?
So years ago, I received an email from a man who had written a manifesto.
What?
Well, think of serial killers and
Name Ted Kaczynski?
Something like that. They usually write they write this huge book, a manifesto about their purpose in life and why the world is against them, and they want the world to know how awesome their thoughts are. Mm-hmm. And if I remember correctly, this guy from Sydney, by the way, not Montana, Australia, although it could have been Kaczynski then, if it was Montana.
This conversation's just turned.
But just listen to me. So if I recall correctly, it was something about the end of the world with references to Star Trek and Star Wars. I definitely remember Star Trek and Star Wars, but this
You could animate that so well.
I know. Send them on to me next time. It's like a hoot.
Yeah.
Weirdest job, Nolan? This will be good.
Well, my worst? There was a big, I wouldn't say this is weird, but if you look at sort of kind of what we do, I had to turn down last year. It was actually sort of a painful decline because I had been talking to them for a while. I had to turn down a very, very large visual identity branding for a large marketing agency. I'm not going to name who they are, but like a very large, international agency. And they'd seen me speak on presentation at a agency conference, and we started talking, and they said, "Oh, you know, we need our capabilities deck is sort of, you know, a mess." And so I started talking to them about that. I'm like, "Absolutely, I can help you with that." I went and met with them, and these conversations sort of evolved from working on the capes deck to, you know, we have an internal creative team and creative director, and we just, you know, created a new logo last year, and that's all they had. And they said, "We want you to design our whole visual identity for the agency. You know, the only thing that's going to stay is the logo." I was like, "Okay, but we want, you know, print treatments and digital treatments and presentation and marketing, and like, how do our business cards look?" And that is something, you know, we do identity on a much smaller scale. But this was a very large agency, and I started going through and I started speccing it out and, you know, almost hiring designers and stuff. And I just realized at the end, I said, "This is just, it's just too big. It's too big for us." And also the timeline they wanted. And I said, I'm going to be butting heads with your internal creative director on this, mm-hmm. like, who wasn't even in the meetings. And I said, "You know what? Nice. I understand you want to get this sort of working, but I'm not the right person." So I turned down that very, very large paycheck, but it just wasn't going to happen.
Wow, I was kind of thinking in a total different route of weirdest. That's like painful, but it's weird just to get something so large. It's also kind of an unusual one for an agency that does identity to need an identity, but it makes sense because their internal teams are so busy.
Yeah, well, they were more digital marketing, but, you know, I kept saying, like, why are you asking me this? Like, this is generally people go to Interbrand or Pentagram at your level for this kind of thing.
Wow.
And they said, "Well, we just like you." I was like, "That's nice. Very flattering."
Yes.
Okay, weirdest job. I've got one. And it's completely different train. Actually, it's made more along the lines of Sandy's here. So we moved away from most web design at this point. You know, we're now just handling existing clients that have specialty web requests. But this one's from a few years ago, thank goodness. And we received a request, a very large request, as a matter of fact. It was going to be a very, it was going to be a large project to build out an entire website from the ground up. It was going to be information, retail, so e-commerce. And this one may have been the turning point for when we decided we knew what we didn't want to do, which was pursue web design, because it was for a very large adult industry company. Very, very large, very reputable.
That would be weird.
Very much something that we just kind of, you know, much along the lines of your what was it, Fox News deal? But we had a very clear upfront once we, but the conversation didn't evolve to what the content was right away. It was a very much a capabilities conversation. Can you accomplish this? And it kept growing and growing.
They didn't, they didn't tell you what the business was up front?
No, not right up front. And okay. They were really, really, so the conversation, I was like, hey, you know, this is going to be a great, look at the scope. And then I, you know, we started getting, okay, who do we, you know, we're going to have to bring in people to take care of this type of coding. And, you know, now things are much more plug and play than they were. I mean, this is over 8 years ago. And at that point, so we kind of right then and there decided the web industry may have taken a turn for something we don't want to pursue as our company. And it was, so it was a very awkward, funny. Yeah. So that was a weird job. It was
that
a big job.
That was a weird one. That was weird. What about painful? Have there been painful jobs?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I had to turn down a couple speaking engagements in Hong Kong and Singapore last month.
Oh!
Yeah. There was a little money there, but just not enough to justify, you know, one day in Hong Kong, one day in Singapore, traveling between, getting there, getting back. It just wasn't, wasn't going to. And then there was no sort of glory in it either. It was just sort of going to be like 12 people in a unknown people in a small room.
Okay. So. Webinar time.
Yeah.
I think generally any job that I thought I could do, like I'm doing the client a favor, I'm squeeze it in before a vacation, for example, or without enough time to actually do it right, becomes painful. So really it's my own fault. I make it painful.
Yeah, those things you think you can squeeze in and
right,
yeah, which is why I always go the opposite. You know, somebody has like a, hey, can you do this for me? And I look at it; it's like an hour of work. I'm like, yeah, I can probably get that back to you in a week. And then,
good idea.
I mean, I always err on that side, and chances are I'll be able to, you know, get it done the next day. And then I kind of feel bad when I send it so early.
I know,
because I did say that, but then I don't want to hold it. Anyway, that's my issues to deal with.
Most painful. I would say we say no to a fair amount of projects at this point, but we have a specific area of it. You know, so almost all of our show site graphic support, where we're the on-site presentation specialist, you know, being an on-site presentation specialist is great, but they're also, the events are date driven. You know exactly when they're going to happen. And even with a team of graphics ops on our team internally here, we have a lot of requests that have overlapping dates. So we have to say no to projects, and some are more painful than others. Mm-hmm. Like the Detroit and New York auto press events this year, you know, they just overlapped, and those are big technology, big presentation graphics, fully scripted. I mean, they're the best way to run a presentation, and having to say no to something like that is just painful, but we just don't have literally the manpower to say yes to everything that comes our way. We have clients that now know, you know, many meetings book out years in advance. So we have stuff on our books through 2020 already. It's pretty darn cool.
That's great.
But they know they want to lock in that, you know, somebody on our team will be there. We say, you know, those are painful to turn down. Some of them, even some of the smaller ones, because they're just so many fun things. Or anyways, the topic is of interest, and it's great to be backstage with those presenters and whatnot. So,
do you ever choose based on geography, like the Caribbean versus, I don't know,
Alaska,
Detroit in February?
Yeah, we're at a stage now where our kids are old enough to handle themselves, so we'll say yes to pretty much anything international that needs two graphics ops, because Lori and I will travel together. We will share a hotel room cost for you. We will, and then we usually tag on a week or so of, you know, adventuring. So, I mean, no, we actually base it more on, it's almost a first come, first serve.
You know, Michael,
it's on the calendar.
Michael Caine said, he actually put in his book, he said that he chooses scripts largely based on where they're filming. So if they're filming in the Caribbean, you know, he's there.
It's a lot better than the Detroit filming.
Right, which is why I don't think Michael Caine has ever been in a movie that's that has snow in it. I think
that's funny.
Okay, so how about this? Any stories of saying yes, but then later knowing that you should have said no?
No, you know what? Not really.
Because
I think with many projects, while I'm in the middle of the project, it's like, I can't wait to get this done. But all in all, the clients have paid me and I've learned something from the project, whether it's time management or how to deal with that kind of client, how to do that kind of great project. I don't know. I'm over.
You spin everything positively. Even bad situations, you're like, what can I learn from this?
I'm not an angel by any means, because I can get pretty crabby in the middle of a project.
It's relative with you, Sandy.
Well, exactly. I'm overly conscientious. I often ask myself in the middle of a project, you know, is this really worth it? Worth it being a headache? And, you know, a year later when I'm calmed down and having birthed the baby, I think everything's okay.
Wow. That's phenomenal. I'm very positive, but I definitely have some things I complain about.
Yes.
To clients or just internally?
Maybe both.
Have we ever said things to clients we wish we shouldn't?
Another episode.
Okay. Should we have said no or we realize it? You know, we've been fortunate on very few projects to have never been paid. And I think those are the ones, if you don't get paid for something, you're like, I should have said no. And then there's the ones in the middle where the scope just grows so large or takes so many detours. You're like, we should have said no because now I'm thinking about it. We did have one where I knew about 3 weeks into what turned into a 5-week project that we should have said no, because the project changed, completely different project 3 times over by the time we were done. But yet we had a estimate that the client wanted to stick to because the deliverable was kind of the same, you know, the same parameters, but totally different content. I'm like, you know, but we've redesigned this.
Yeah.
You know, your 70 slides has had us, you know, log, you know, somewhere 160 slides of design from scratch. You know, right. We're actually looking at, so, you know, the one I'm thinking of, the one I'm still bitter about today. So there's,
I'm still
waiting for the payment. And this is probably 4 years ago. It was a print design project. And this is our background. We used to only do print. And then we moved into some multimedia and then we transitioned to presentation and kind of made a stand there. But so we like to do print design. It's still in our DNA. They're great projects. I love the finality of them. But we did one. It was a conference held in a very large city. Okay, it was Los Angeles. It was right next to us. And the promoter contacted us. He contracted us to develop the welcome information booklet. And it was kind of a cool little thing. I won't say what the event was about, but we liked it. It was a good one. It was a nonprofit event. We agreed to do the project and we agreed to do it at a very, very minimal rate. We looked at it and said, okay, we've seen what they did, which was basically a Microsoft Word document. Like, we can up this real easily. We can do this and that. And then the project specs just kind of continued to grow on a very short timeline. Cause again, this is an event that's going to happen. You know, the budget didn't grow with it. And at that point, we should have said no. Like, okay, wait, you've more than tripled the amount of pages in this thing. We're now designing advertisers, your sponsors' ads into this. I think Lori and I are still very proud of the final multi-page design booklet. But, you know, the conference was not well attended from what we understand. Basically, we were told there is no money to pay us, even at the heavily discounted project fee we had agreed to. And we did not receive a project deposit up front. And that was definitely a turning point on new clients and project deposits. We'll talk about that in, I guess, the next episode. But, you know, so there were at least 2 triggers in this project I can think of now. Can you tell I'm still bitter about this one?
Yeah.
I haven't let go. Therapy just hasn't canceled that one out of my, but you know, we had at least 2 opportunities where we should have said, this is a no project. We have to stop here. So we said yes to a project that did not have a full budget and then said yes to a project through completion that we should have said no to several times. And that's, those are hard learning lessons.
Yeah.
You know, I've had a few regrets like that, but I like to think I'm good at seeing red flags. But a couple of years ago, you know, this is sort of the typical, you know, I should have said no, you know, not extraordinary situation, but thing that's, you know, a lot of us have seen. Client calls, going to meet with them. They seemed excited to start, new client. They're sort of associated with a big name agency, something. And then, you know, after that initial meeting, nothing happens for months. Fine. Mm. They called again months later and wanted to start the project and ask for another meeting. It's like, okay. So I sort of stupidly said, okay, you know, and arranged the meeting, went in. It was a 5-minute meeting because there was nothing for us to talk about. They said, we're ready to start. And we've already seen your portfolio, right? I said, yeah. So again, so right out of the bat, waste of my time. So that was a red flag. But we started with a 50% deposit and examples of decks that they liked that were highly minimalist, very simple. And we talked explicitly about the style they wanted. You know, I showed them examples. They showed me examples. They sent me links. And I said, great, I think I understand what you want. We gave them that. We gave them a number of different, you know, design options, which we don't always do, but in this case, we did. And they came back with, well, you know, we could have done that. That's just a few lines on a page.
Oh.
And I said, but this is exactly what, you know, we showed. And you know, that's part of the process. I said, okay, so now I understand that you actually don't really want those. You want something a little more designed and right? Yes, that's what we want. Okay. So then we went back and we added against my, I didn't want to do it at this point, but I'm, you know, I'm invested. So we did a more designed, more, you know, I think gratuitous sort of design for them. They looked at it and said, well, this is just over design. We want simplicity. And at that point I said, you know what you don't want, you just don't know what you actually want. And we parted ways. And so with a 50% deposit, I, you know, lost a tiny bit of money, but, you know, basically broke even. But that, yeah, that's the kind of thing that, you know, but you don't want to, you know, I don't want to turn down a client just, you know, just because of one thing.
Right.
You know, I'm not quite sure I could have headed that off before, but anyway. So yeah, that's sort of a typical thing when a client doesn't know what they want. Don't know what they don't like.
Right. I'm hearing you both have gut. You know, there's something inside of you that says, I shouldn't be working on this project. Yeah. We just need to listen to our guts a little more. In your case, Troy, it would be Lori's gut that you have to listen to.
I didn't have a Lori.
No. Two letters that can save a designer lots of issues if used at the right time. I truly hope every designer joining us for this episode, they have lots of projects to say yes to and very few that they should pass on. Experience is not always fun to learn from. I believe all three of us have learned from some frustrating experiences. So take our word for it. Sometimes no is the best answer to a project request. Sometimes it's for the client. Sometimes it's for you.
All right, so we're going to do a kind of a new segment at the end here, our Q&A corner, because we've been getting a lot of emails, questions, comments from listeners, which is awesome. So please definitely keep those coming. I think email, Troy, is probably the best way.
At this point, us. It is, definitely.
So, and they can find that. They can get that from the website, right? So,
info@thepresentationpodcast.com. It's just info at. It's a long one, but that's the easiest way. And the links are on the website.
Cool. So yeah, so any question that you have about anything, well, not anything, but anything relevant, send our way. This isn't a question, but a fellow designer shared a tip with us this week based on something we talked about, I think, in last episode. Chad Jardine from GoReact recommended Spectacle for the Mac. This is a little utility tool, a piece of third-party software. You can get it at spectacleapp.com. We'll put that in the show notes. So this is a great little tool I had no idea about that lets you set predetermined spaces on your desktop for windows. So, and it lets you customize them with keyboard shortcuts. So for example, probably the simplest thing that I've set mine up to do right now is if I have a window selected, any application, any finder window, and I hit shift command left arrow, it will, it will make that window fill the just the left 50% of my screen. And then if I select another window and hit Command Shift right arrow, that window will take up the right side. So you can set everything. You can have quadrants or triads or all sorts of different things. And it keeps the media bar at the top, unlike Mac's split screen view, where it basically goes into full screen and you can't see anything else. So it's a lot more flexible. If you're the kind of person that wants to make maximum use of different windows, you can even do two, you know, for copying slides back and forth. You can all stay within one application, just two documents. Anyway, so it's Spectacle app. It's great. I like it. I've installed it. And thank you, Chad.
Yeah, that's perfect, because we could not think of the way, because I was talking about, that was my pro tip, was using the Windows key and the left or right arrow to basically snap applications to half the screen and set them side by side. And I knew there was a way to do it on the Mac, but obviously there is a app that does it even, you know, just kind of mimics it. It just does more than the Windows base one. And the Windows one, by the way, I live by it. It is one of the coolest features around, but this is awesome. Thanks, yeah, Chad.
It's nice. It makes use of the Mac's accessibility features for, I don't know how it does it, but it's in your, it goes in your system preferences where you can set all that.
Okay. Presentation pro and tech tips. This is one of my favorite little segments here, because I always have a fun time thinking of what I can talk about. But for this one, I decided during the conversation here, here's what I'm going to throw out there. It's like the Staples button. You know, Staples had a easy button. This is the no button. It's the exact same thing. This is what Lori gave me. I'm going to put a link to it. And it sits in our office. So we share, the TLC is a very large bullpen area. All the designers are in one area. Lori and I have a separate office. We're one of the few places that can actually close a door. That's mainly for phone conversation stuff. But that no button sits between our two desks. And if she's listening in on a phone conversation.
For the last time, no. No.
No.
No. N-O.
It's just awesome. I'm going to put a link to it. There's my tech tip. Everybody should have a pro tip, excuse me. Everybody should have a no button just to remind them that saying no is sometimes the best option.
Doesn't it come with different no?
It does. It has like 20 of them, so you never know what's going to come out of it.
I have seen that. It's really funny. My pro tip actually is a suggested article. Jeremy Waite is an evangelist at IBM who gives tons of keynotes. And if you are familiar with IBM, you're familiar with IBM Watson. And what Jeremy did, he wrote an article on the shape of my perfect keynote. And he used IBM Watson to evaluate audience preferences and reactions to his various keynotes. I don't understand everything about it. But what's really interesting is that Watson came up with a very similar shape to Nancy Duarte's analysis of famous keynotes.
Oh, you mean the little line graph, the little...
up and down. Yeah.
What would you call it?
Exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah. So it's a very interesting article, and I'll put it in the show notes for folks to visit.
Nice. My tech tip is an oldie but goodie, which is Dropbox. I simply cannot do my job without it. And it's just in the background. I love it. I've got the pro version with lots of storage and everything. But I go back and forth between my laptop and my desktop. So I don't ever have to worry about things being synced up and, you know, working on a train and then closing down and then going to my desktop and the same files all updated. Plus, I use it all the time to send clients files. So I don't even have to move the file from its work folder. I basically just right click, get the link, and send it to the client. And then I can also manage access to that. It can be there for as long as I want. And then the moment I move that file or archive it or whatever, it goes away because that link is no longer valid. I can send people links on my phone, you know, to a 100 meg file just by going to the app, clicking it, sending by email. I don't have to worry about WeTransfer or uploading things or downloading things. It's great. And I don't have... Yes.
Question for you. You must sync it on your desktops then. That's what makes it really, really easy. I'm not sure everyone does that. That is the magic with Dropbox.
Oh yeah. That's the genius of it. It's just, and it's on my, I have a PC laptop. It syncs there. And on my PC, I only sync certain folders because I don't I just don't need it taking up, you know, all my other stuff.
Good idea.
Sandy, we don't sync to the desktop. We sync to a specific folder set with active projects.
I should have said sync to your hard drive, your computer, whatever.
Specifically. Mm-hmm.
So I just love it. And I've used Box and I've used kind of OneDrive, and I don't think they hold a candle to the simplicity of Dropbox for me.
Great reminder.
And also there was a bit of news too. Did anybody see the Microsoft took down docs.com or something?
Yes.
Because of security concerns that people apparently have been telling them about for years. That's my tip.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a graphic design studio team focused on presentation design. Check us out online at www.tlccreative.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/TLC Creative Services, and the blog at thepowerpointblog.com.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. We've got lots of goodies and free downloads and stuff there once you subscribe to that. And if your organization is interested in data visualization or presentation training, give us a holler.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website, soon to be updated, by the way, at presentationwhiz.biz, my blog at pptwhizblog, or the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. Or just search for Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.